AT&T Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect. We are presented by Bosky Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, Roofing, and Restoration. For service, call 444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. I am joined today on the program by one of possibly my oldest friends. He's not old. I'm old, but we've known each other for a really long time. Please welcome Jeff Apodaca to the program today. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Hey, Jim. It's great. Thank you for having me on this morning. I really appreciate it, or today. Thank you so much.
Jeff, I wanted to have you on because you have just an amazing story, and I have known you for a really long time, my friend. I know I'm dating us, you were an old Lobo basketball player, or you were a Lobo football player, and I was a little bit before you dribbling the ball, but I like the ball that comes back to me, not that pointy one, Jeff.
Yeah, I just like hitting people, so football was a natural thing for me.
And you did do that well.
By the way, let me clarify that. So if anybody ever used that again, I liked hitting people with my pads when I was playing football. So.
And Jeff, you used to disconnect them from their pads, if I remember correctly. That was some good stuff. Of course, you played football at Santa Fe High School.
Yeah, I played at Santa Fe High. We won state my senior year. I was all-state running back and played linebacker in high school, knowing that at my height I was never going to play linebacker in college. Was very blessed to get recruited to go to SMU and play at SMU. Got there as a freshman, and there was a couple of sophomores there named Eric Dickerson and Craig James, who ended up in the NFL Hall of Fame. So Joe Morrison kind of was turning the program around here. They convinced me to transfer back, and they actually moved me to defense. So I played safety my last 3 years at UNM.
Yeah. Jeff, the last time we saw Jeff Apodaca in the news, you were running in the primary for governor for the Democrat Party in the state of New Mexico. What have you been up to since?
Well, you know, some people think I was kind of crazy, but, and I had no intention, Jim, I had no intention going into politics. I think your listeners would agree that our political system's a little messed up between both sides arguing and fighting. And my wife and I was gone for almost 23 years working in the entertainment business in New York and L.A. My wife's from Albuquerque, I'm from Santa Fe, and we have twin boys, and we decided to move back to New Mexico. It's been 11 years now. But I saw the dysfunction, and so I decided to run for governor to try and change things around. And I tell people all the time, I went through an economic plan to basically create our economy. And part of that was, I know some of your listeners may or may not be for this, but I'm for legalization of cannabis, besides the medical benefits of it. I think it's a great benefit and great opportunity. But there's another plant called the hemp plant, which is not—it's a cousin of the cannabis plant, but it's not marijuana. You can't get high off it, but you have the same medical benefits of it, and you have fiber, you have herd, you have graphene, you have many different elements in it that you can create industrial plastics, industrial industries based off it. And so, after the campaign, I raised some money. We're going to start seeding some small companies to basically start growing hemp here in New Mexico. The federal government legalized growing hemp in the Farm Bill in 2018. Last year was New Mexico's first year of growing it. And so literally, my group, we raised about $1 million, and we were going to seed some companies. But what I noticed very quickly was that the farmers needed help not only to grow this plant, but also to manufacture it and then get it to the market. So really, I started a company called Fathom New Mexico, and in fact, we were just in the press about a month ago, maybe a couple weeks ago. We have been acquired by Santa Fe Farms, and Santa Fe Farms started the growing side of it. We were kind of the manufacturing side of it, and we decided to merge companies and kind of do a vertical and all tied together. So what I've been doing since I ran for office is basically for the last 2 years, I started a hemp manufacturing processing company. We just merged with Santa Fe Farms. We're now considered Santa Fe Farms, LLC. And we grow and help farmers grow industrial hemp, not marijuana. And we make medical products. We make industrial products, bioplastics. Graphene can go into batteries. It has a longer life than lithium. And so we're doing a lot of those things. And hopefully we're building out a new facility down south of Albuquerque in Mesa del Sol. And hopefully looking to hire about 83 to 100 people over the next 18 months. And the goal is to make New Mexico the leaders in hemp industry and hemp production.
You know, Jeff,
I know that's a mouthful.
No, that's a lot. Yeah, well, I'm appreciative of the fact that, I do appreciate your position on cannabis. I do want you to know that I have had a couple of folks that we've interviewed over the last year about medical cannabis. And the church has been wary of that, obviously, for various reasons. But what's really amazing is probably more phone calls than I've ever generated on this show were from Christian people that are using, I'll just say, medical marijuana. And they have had tremendous results. It helps with nausea. There's so many people out there that are experiencing devastating cancers. And, Jeff, we're going to talk about this in a minute, but most of our listeners don't realize that that was actually something you had to deal with. As a young athlete at the University of New Mexico, you had to overcome cancer yourself. And so you really have a perspective on these products. And I'm fascinated, and I'd love for you to tell us one more time, what are all the products that you can that are made from hemp? Boy, it sounds like the list is extensive.
Well, on the hemp side, so everybody knows what CBD is, right? Mm-hmm. And so CBD is a natural anti-inflammatory. It's a natural painkiller. It's a natural, if you make it a certain way, it's a natural relaxation to make you sleep. There's a lot of different uses for it, and there's many, many different cannabinoids in the plant itself. The marijuana plant has the same thing as the hemp plant. They're both kind of cannabis plants, and they're both cousins of each other, but the hemp plant has very little THC where you can't have that hallucinogenic feeling, and so the federal government allows us to be below 0.3. But in the stock of the hemp plant, because the marijuana plant, let's call that the cannabis marijuana plant, it kind of grows short, stubby, wide, and has a bunch of flowers and big buds on it. The hemp plant has some of the same buds, but the hemp plant actually grows tall, 12, 15 feet high. It's much thinner. And within the stock, you can make wood products. You can make fiber out of it. There's graphene. There's carbon elements in there. So there's many different things. It's stronger. It's lighter. You can grow it every 70 days. And hemp was actually outlawed back in the early 1900s, not because it was a drug, but because it was one of our first medicines. The pharmaceutical companies wanted it off the market because it was a competitor to their pain pills. The cotton industry wanted it off the market because it was a competition to their clothing lines and the cotton. The lumber guys wanted it off the market because it took the lumber guys 20 years to grow a tree. You can grow hemp every 70 days. And let me remind your listeners is four of our seven forefathers were hemp farmers when our country started. George Washington was a hemp farmer. Thomas Jefferson was a hemp farmer. The Constitution of the United States is written on hemp paper.
It was
a major industry in the country. It all went away in the 1900s, and then it got tied up in the Say No to Drugs thing because it looked like a marijuana plant. And actually DuPont and the pharmaceutical industry during Richard Nixon's administration lobbied very hard, and in the ninth hour, hemp got lumped in to a narcotic element, Schedule One, with marijuana. Just reasons they just wanted it off the market. So the strange thing is, since the 70s, you can make hemp products in the United States. You just couldn't grow the plant. So we were actually importing plants from Israel, from China, from Europe to make products here. So, you know, when you import raw materials, it's just very expensive. And so so our legislators and our senators in Washington woke up. And actually, it was the tobacco industry that pushed it in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Kentucky. And McConnell and the Republicans put it in the Farm Bill in 2018 to allow agriculture and the farmers to start growing this because it's another opportunity for our rural communities and the farming community.
I absolutely love the fact that this is going to employ Americans, Jeff.
Well, let me tell you, here in New Mexico, we have 600 acres. We own three farms ourselves. We have 600 acres in the Stanley Moriarty people. Just in the last year, we have 12, 14 full-time employees, and we hire 30 seasonal employees and probably another 10 part-time all year round. So we've created 20, and we're just getting started. So we've created 20, 30 new jobs in the Moriarty area. Not to mention, we bought about $2 million worth of equipment in the Moriarty community between farming equipment, harvesting equipment, things like that. And that's just the farming side. Here in Albuquerque, we're building out, we're expanding our facility. But here in our facility here, we have 22 new jobs, 23 new jobs. We're probably going to hire another 83 jobs. And that's not counting, we also have 25 contracts with additional farmers that are growing on their own, and then we process this and get their stuff to the market. So I don't, each farm probably has 8 to 10 employees. So if you talk just, we have 25 farms, and there's 113 licenses. So let's say half are successful, and that's 50, and each of them are hiring 10 people. You know, that's 500 new jobs in the state of New Mexico. So within 1 year, I could just name three companies and some farms. We've created 500-600 new jobs just in 1 year.
I love it,
and
Jeff.
And these are rural. Not only are they Albuquerque manufacturing, but these are also jobs in our rural communities. And as you know, our rural communities are dying for economic growth. And so these are opportunities for those communities also.
Jeff, I want to give our listeners just a little bit more framework. We've already mentioned that you attended the University of New Mexico and played football for the Lobos. You're a little bit younger. Hate to admit that.
I
played basketball a few years earlier than you were there, but people may remember back to 1975 to 1979, your father, Jerry Apodaca, was the 24th governor of the state of New Mexico. So as a young man, you have grown up involved in politics. And Jeff, this is something I want to qualify, because we know a lot of the same people. We know a lot of the old-timer Democrat folks, leadership in this state. We know the old-time Republicans. And Jeff, in the days that you were growing up, these folks would maybe argue on the floor of the House, or they would have conversations in chambers about various issues, and then they would go to lunch with each other, and they would work out ways to make things happen for our state, no matter what side of the aisle they were on. What has happened to that?
You know, I think it's all about individual careers. I'm one of these, you know, I guess I'm a politician now since I ran for governor for the first time in my life, but I believe in term limits. We had some term limits back then, specifically at the governor's level. You could only have one four-year term back then. But it's funny because we talk about it, Jim. First of all, my dad was a high school football coach at Valley High. Realized in the 50s, early 60s, he couldn't support a family of five on a teaching salary, so he ended up getting the insurance business back in his hometown of Las Cruces. So I was actually born in Cruces. Then he became a state senator for eight years, and then he ran for governor, and he won, first Latino governor in the country. But I tell people all the time, it's like, and I'll tell you a quick story on the campaign, but I tell people all the time, it's like, when I was a kid growing up, and then my dad became governor, I remember during the session, probably they drank too much, they'd go to the bull ring, hash out their differences, hang out with each other. But my father would have, there was like a little kitchen nook that fit about 12 people at the governor's residence. My father, every morning, would have them, the leadership over, Democrats and Republicans, and I would go into the kitchen and have breakfast before I went to middle school, high school. And the rule in our household was, when someone comes to that door, you better go in, you better get up and say hi and shake hands with them, or you're in trouble. So I knew if my dad heard me in the kitchen, he would do something to embarrass me if I didn't come in and say hi. So I'd come in and say hi, and everybody asked me about sports and stuff like that. But I would sit there in the kitchen having breakfast, and I would hear them argue. But I would hear them say, you agreed to this last night at dinner. You agreed to this last night over drinks. I got it on a napkin right here. You signed it. Like, they would bicker, and then they would work out their differences, and they hung out. But I tried to explain to people. I would date the Republican daughters. We would go on ski trips together, right? And the parents sometimes talk politics. But, like, I remember going on ski trips with our Republican friends. Like, as kids, we knew the difference between Democrats and Republicans, but we all kind of hung out, and sometimes our parents argued about it, and most of the times they figured it out. Today, I believe in New Mexico, what's happening, and you see this, and and I like Bill Richardson, but you see it since Bill Richardson, and there's a pathway there. Most of our politicians, specifically at the state and federal level, have now become New Mexico's stepping stone for their own personal careers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the biggest reasons I ran, because I had no agenda to create a political career. And in fact, my own party, who tried to block me to run for governor, tried to get me involved in running for other positions and position me for the next 8 to 12 years on this stepping stone. I said, you understand your way is burying our state, and it's become so divisive between the two. And So that's what I tell people. In the old days, Manuel Lujan stayed in Congress for 30 years. Mm-hmm. Pete Domenici stayed at the Senate for 32 years, I think it was. Jeff Bingaman, Democrats and Republicans. And they served New Mexico. Today, our legislators and our at the federal national level, the minute they get there, they start positioning themselves for other positions, which, look, I'm not saying I agree with the federal structure, but it is what it is. And by us losing our federal seniority every 4 to 6 years because our politicians decide we're going to run for something else, I mean, I can already tell you, Jim, there are four Democrats that just got elected into office 2 years ago. They're already positioning themselves for 22 and 26 because the rumor is Grisham's going to leave to Washington after 2 years as governor if Biden wins. And that's my biggest issue. And I think the people have lost sight of what's best for New Mexico, not what's best for a political career. And I think that's happened, and that's not just in New Mexico. I think that's happened across the country. And I think that's the sinful part of politics right now.
Jeff, I really appreciate you sharing those stories about when you were young and in the governor's mansion. And I actually had a little experience in the governor's mansion myself. We're going to take a quick break. Say thank you to our sponsors. We'll be back with Jeff Apodaca right after these messages. Stay with us.
Hey, Boudicke, Car Spa here. Someone once said, just all right is not all right, and just okay is not okay. For our hard-earned resources, we value service excellence with a higher expectation than just all right. A burned steak when you ask for medium rare is not all right. Stale chips and salsa, not okay. An oil leak after receiving lube services is far from all right. And your automobile after receiving cleaning services, you find sheets of water, smeared windows, dirty floor carpets, 2 of 4 tires shining, and the attendant saying, hurry, the next car is coming. Sorry to say, you just received services from the not all right, not okay car wash. Here's the good news. Car Spa's 4 locations are out cleaning the not okay car washes by a Google rating of 4 stars or better. For the best car cleaning service money can buy, it's Rain Tunnel Car Spa. Google us for exact locations. Car Spa, locally owned for 47 years.
Serving you and your family day and night. Call Bosky when you want it done right. For heating and cooling, plumbing and more. 24/7 we'll be at your door.
Locally grown, locally owned. Bosca Heating and Cooling. A portion goes back into the community. 444-7200.
For quality service like a breath of fresh air, call Bosca and we'll be there.
Gonset Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury. Don't ignore the pain and discomfort any longer. Schedule a consultation today at gonsted-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
This is a fresh thought. Listen up to Levi Lusco.
What needs to happen in order for our inability to keep God's law to be covered over? What has to happen for us to once again enter into the presence of God that we had access to before the fall? And so this box, this gold-covered box was symbolic of the presence of God. And so in David's notes that he wrote in Psalm 132, he talks about how he couldn't sleep and he couldn't eat because he just longed to see God's presence in the heart of the nation of Israel. He longed to see the whole nation of Israel take their lives back from the idolatry and the foolishness and the smallness. He wanted the ark restored. He wanted there to be joy and gladness that would come from the presence of God, for them all to tap into a different way to be human than just doing what their neighbors did, to doing what the world did. He longed to see this happen.
For more fresh thoughts, go to levilusco.com.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are on the phone this afternoon with Jeff Apodaca. Jeff has extensive titles. He is the vice chairman of Santa Fe Farms. He's the CEO of H47 and Fathom NM LLC and High Desert Hemp. We're talking about the differences today between cannabis and hemp and all the amazing things that hemp can be used for to produce products and goods. Jeff, son of the former governor of the state of New Mexico, Jerry Apodaca, you yourself a candidate, as we've already talked about, for governor of the state of New Mexico. Jeff, I want to go back to your time as a Lobo. And a lot of people don't remember this, but, You, my friend, are a man of tremendous courage, and I'm not just stroking you. I really think that all the things you overcame, you fought cancer as you were an athlete. Tell us a little bit about that experience and how that's led you to be a family man and an entrepreneur.
Well, thanks, and it was 40 years ago. I can't believe it's been 40 years. But I was actually, you know, our team won state my senior year. I was getting recruited to go play college football at SMU, Texas. UNM was recruiting me. And then my senior year, in my senior year, I got cancer. And I woke up one morning, couldn't go to the bathroom. A tumor was growing in my body, kind of blocked off some of the urinary tract. I was the ninth person in the world to ever have my type of cancer. It was this rare sarcoma of the soft muscle. God bless Dr. Jaffe, who's still alive today. Dr. Jaffe at MD Anderson in Houston, I was diagnosed in Santa Fe, was the only person that had dealt with it. So we went to Houston, got diagnosed, and came up with a two-year plan to go through chemotherapy and radiation, no surgery. So I went through chemotherapy and radiation. So I had to put all my dreams and hopes of college football and my scholarships and all that stuff on the sideline for 2 years. And so I tell people I was a little bit more mature because I purposely didn't go to college. Even though I probably could have done a little bit of schoolwork. I couldn't have played sports. I didn't want to start burning up my eligibility. But to me, it was a little stepping stone, a little roadblock in my life. I don't let anything hold me back. Our family motto is God, family, friends, never give up. And so to me, it was, you're an athlete, Jim. So, hey, you got to conquer the next move. I wasn't going to die. I mean, I was 17, 18 years of age. They would tell me we're trying to save your life. They did tell me I'd never play sports again, and I proved them all wrong. Did 24 months of chemotherapy and radiation. Was very fortunate and blessed, and I'm a very faithful man in my faith with Jesus Christ. I know Jesus took me down that path. Now, would I want to go back and do it again? Probably not. Am I glad it happened? Absolutely. I tell people all the time, what I look back now is chances are, Jim, I would have gone on to play at SMU. Maybe I would have transferred back to New Mexico. I would have had a good college career. Probably would have gotten into the entertainment business like I did anyway. So that path probably would have stayed the same. But since I was one of the few people, because people have to remember this, it didn't really hit me until they told me I was, they never really used the word cured. But in 1981, after 2 years, I had to sign a release. They finally released me to go back out and try and play football and get back into shape. And so I went to SMU in 81. So I was, about a year and a half behind everybody else. I remember the doctors telling me, well, we have an 80% chance that the cancer won't come back for 10 years. I said, well, when do I get to 100%? Well, doctors never give you 100%. Mm-hmm. So then I said, well, what happens after 10 years? Now, keep in mind, this is 1970. This is 1981. I said, what happens after 10 years? They said, we don't know. I go, what do you mean you don't know? Well, we've never had any, there's no generation that has survived cancer past 10 years. So you're talking about we're the first, not just me, we're the first generation to survive cancer more than 10 years, right? And so that really hit me. And so I live life with my faith and my path full throttle. Now, what I've also been, what was also taught by my parents and my family is to always give back to the community. Not that I'd ever want anybody to go through cancer, but since I had to go through it, it's been a blessing in my life because literally I've been able to touch and help more people, more kids, than I would have ever been able to as just being an athlete. Now I'm an athlete that survived cancer. And in 1982, when I came back and transferred here and we played, I guess in 83, after the 10-1 season, the American Cancer Society actually came to me because ABC and CBS Sports did a story on me. I was in Good Morning America, cancer survivor comes back, I'm on the starting lineup again, and also blah, blah, blah. So it was national news, right? Cancer kid comes back. It was national news. Well, the American Cancer Society came to me in 1984, I guess it was, and asked me to be a spokesperson at their national convention because I had done some stuff here in New Mexico for the Cancer Society. And I got there, and at the end of my speech, I was the keynote speaker. And you got to understand there's 2,000 people there at the National Convention for the American Cancer Society. Mm-hmm. You'd have thought I was a rock star walking off the stage. I started walking off the stage. More importantly, I had mom and dad grab me and grab my arms. And they said, oh, and they're crying. I'm going to get kind of teared up here. But they told me, first time I ever heard this, I now know my kid Sorry.
Yeah.
I now know my kid has an opportunity. I now know my kid can survive.
Yes.
And so at 21, 22, that hit me. So ever since then, I basically have worked with college kids or high school kids or young kids, Camp Enchantment, Cancer Center here, the Children's Hospital here, wherever I've lived. I've really reached out on my downtime and have really helped cancer kids and kids because, more importantly, and today's a lot different because there's so much more development on treatments and it's so much better and there is so much survival now. But more importantly, I've been able to reach out with my foundation now, with the Multimedia Center, the scholarships we do. I've been able to reach out more to give family hope because I remember me going through treatments, and I still remember to this day being really, really, because I'd be sick for like 16 days when I take a treatment. I just remember like wishing I could be outside or just getting through the next day. So really my speech to these kids or to the teenagers or even to their parents, just survive the moment. The next day will be better, right? And that's what you have to do. So in reality, I've been blessed, and Jesus Christ, you know, gave me a pathway to help so many more people than I ever would have. So like I said, not that I ever want to go back there to those 2 years, but it was actually a 2 year of blessing of a test that I think I'd be a failed Christian if I didn't use that path for, you know, to do other things to help other people. And that's what, even my wife and I, we lived in L.A., and my wife's from Albuquerque. You know, in L.A., there's so much money being raised. So actually, we came back here, even we're living in L.A., we came back here and started our foundation here. We raised money for the Children's Hospital. We have a multimedia center at the Children's Hospital. We've done cancer programs. And everything we do is not for research. Everything we do is for, and I say educate and entertain, but everything we do is just to help the kids. And we focus on adolescents and teenagers and kids. Everything we do is to help the kids just get through the treatments. We don't. None of our money goes to administrative costs. None of our money goes to
research. Yeah.
It all goes for entertainment, education. So they come to me and say, "Hey, we need more computers. Let's go buy the computers. That you need more tennis balls. Let's go buy tennis balls. But if you need to hire somebody or you need some research money, that's not what our money's for. Our money is to help kids basically enjoy life while they have to go through this." And we've been very blessed to do this right here in New Mexico for the last 20 years. And then we have a scholarship fund that we started because what I realized, we raised some good money. We endowed it at UNM. What I also realized was pediatric nurses and nurses at UNM, if they can get their bachelor's degree, not only does the hospitals get more federal funding, they actually get paid more. So we've actually moved our scholarships to nursing scholarships to help nurses get their bachelor's and their BAs because then the hospital gets a higher standard, the hospital gets more federal funding, and those nurses actually need help. So if there's anybody that's a UNM nurse or a nurse within the UNM system that's going to night school or going to college, please look it up. We have scholarship funds. We give out $4,000 to $5,000 scholarships every year, and we're going through the process right now. So again, it's just a way we can kind of help out by, you know, 2 years of going through chemotherapy and 2 years going through cancer. It's been 40 years. I have not forgot, and I will continue doing this till the day I die.
Jeff, how can our listeners come alongside you and help you with your foundation?
Well, we've stopped raising money.
Oh.
We stopped raising money. We raised more money than we really needed, and so we built the multimedia center out. We put money aside to run the multimedia center for 20 years. We now have a $280,000 endowment to run scholarships. We have that. Here's what your listeners can do, because we also have Camp Enchantment. Camp Enchantment is a camp for cancer kids, and they always need funding, and they lost their funding from the American Cancer Society. So Jackie and I, we have turned our resources to really helping Camp Enchantment. So if anybody wants to help out the cancer kids going to camp every summer, it's a specific need. There's two things we can help with. One, they can make donations to Camp Enchantment. So just go to campenchantment.com, Google it, you'll find it, make a donation. But what we're doing, not only we started this not because of COVID, but we thought it'd be more beneficial. we're actually asking people to have house parties. And we have these house parties maybe once a quarter. And you have house parties, you invite your neighbors. And, you know, we raise money, and basically every house party raises about $10,000, $20,000. And we do probably six, seven house parties a year, and, you know, raise $100,000. And that, you know, that really funds the Camp Enchantment for the year. So I'm not involved in the day-to-day, but Kyle Stepp, who's a cancer survivor and great UNM grad, he's the executive director, and Jackie sits on their board. So if any of your listeners want to help, that's how you can help. You can help Camp Enchantment because it's really helping kids go to camp, and they kind of do the same model that we do.
Absolutely. I'm so intrigued by everything you're doing, Jeff. We're on the phone this afternoon with Jeff Apodaca. Jeff is an entrepreneur. He's covered a lot of ground with us, but we can't let Jeff go without talking a little Lobo football. So when we come back, we're talking to Jeff Apodaca, former Lobo football player, cancer survivor, son of the former governor, Jerry Apodaca. He's an entrepreneur now, teaching all of us about hemp farming and all the products and all the jobs that's bringing to New Mexico. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is John Chitwood with Southern Boulevard Automotive. You have heard a word a lot here of late, and that word is essential. Here at Southern Boulevard Automotive, our master certified technicians understand that your car, truck, or SUV is essential to getting you from point A to point B. We are open for business. Our hours are 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. And don't forget that we have free towing with repairs. Just call for details. Our phone number is 892-2300. That's 892-2300. We are located on the corner of Southern and Western Hills across from McDonald's in Rio Rancho. And I'm here to tell you that the most essential thing in this life is the cross of Jesus. There is absolutely nothing more important to you and I. God saw you as essential and gave his only begotten Son that you would believe in him and have eternal life. Never minimize the cross. It's the centerpiece of the gospel, and never forget the hope you and I have in the empty tomb. I'm John Chitwood with Southern Boulevard Automotive.
Are you looking to pursue biblical studies beyond church and personal Bible study? Take your learning and your life's purpose to the next level with Calvary College. Registration for the 2021 spring term is open now, and the curriculum features both online classes and on-site classes at Calvary Church Albuquerque. Classes include biblical studies like Spiritual Foundations, and the history and authenticity of the Bible, plus classes in key books of the Bible like Daniel, Romans, and Revelation, with video content from world-renowned biblical scholar Skip Heitzik. Calvary College partners with Veritas International University and Calvary Chapel University, so you can earn an accredited undergraduate or graduate degree, or simply increase your knowledge in biblical studies. The deadline to get your application in for the 2021 semester is December 4th. Find out more and apply today at calvaryabq.college. That's calvaryabq.college.
The Lord can do great things through those who are ready and willing. But Pastor Greg Laurie points out, oftentimes we're ready with an excuse. This week on A New Beginning, we'll consider the excuses offered by Moses and see how he finally trusted God's plan. Be sure to listen this week for A New Beginning with Pastor Greg Laurie.
Weekdays at 8:30 a.m. on KNKT. You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back to ABQ Connect. Jeff Apodaca, old friend of mine. We've old Lobos together many years ago, and I just appreciate, Jeff, all that you've shared and the emotion and all the things that you've dealt with. And you mentioned earlier in the program that you like to hit people with your pads and football. And you also mentioned that you just go for it because of all the experiences in your life. And that's exactly what I remember about you as an athlete. I mean, you would hit guys that outweighed you by 150 pounds. You were like a missile coming at them, you know, 100 miles an hour. You had speed, you had tenacity, and you were not afraid. And I want to ask you now about Danny Gonzalez and Lobo football. Are you excited about that? I know COVID's kind of delayed everything. Tell us what you think about our new football coach.
No, you know, first of all, I think Danny was a great hire. Eddie Nunez, the athletic director, and I have become good friends, and I think Danny was a great hire. I didn't know Danny. His name started kind of popping up in our world, you know, when Davies was struggling a little bit, you know, every time there's a coaching change. So I kept hearing this Danny Gonzalez guy, and I really didn't know him, right, because he played here in the 90s. I played in the early 80s, so I was already gone by the time he played, and I was already living in New York and L.A. So, but I started doing my research, and he was with Rocky for a long time. He's a local guy, I believe, Valley High School, played for the Lobos. And one of the things I've told other coaches that were here, you know, this isn't Notre Dame. This isn't USC. This is a community. We're a community. And so basketball, you guys were out in the community. When I played football, we would go scrimmage at Santa Fe. We always had four or five guys in the Santa Fe team. We always had a couple guys from Gallup, you know, guys from down south, from Clovis, from Roswell, Farmington. And so, you know, we were a community. And so what I think is great about Danny is he's been out in the community, and that's what we need to do, because the community needs to support local football. And I think what happened under the previous coaches, not just the last one, is that they come in here and they do recruiting and they bring in a lot of players. And let's be real, for Lobos to be successful, we have to bring 80% of our players from out of state to make this team really successful. But I think what the last coaches were doing, they were not recruiting the local New Mexico kids. And I explain to people all the time, let's be very frank. We were successful when I played in the early 80s. We were 10-1. We were very successful. We had a couple of bad years, but we were successful. When you look at our teams back then, it was 65-68% Texas boys, mostly West Texas, or you go get those B players that were never going to start at UT but come here and be superheroes. Then we had a bunch of transfers, JC transfers from California, some guys from California, mostly JC transfers. Then you had a select kind of pockets of Florida, you know, the South, maybe Chicago. But then New Mexico back then used to be able to keep the best New Mexico players. Yeah, we'd lose one. You know, we lost Jim Everett to Purdue. But, you know, you'd keep the best ones here. And I believe that's what the global football has gone away from. So then all of a sudden you don't see local guys playing. And I think Danny is changing that. I think Danny, I mean, you've already seen it. I mean, Danny, there were four really good New Mexico ball players that were committed to other schools out of state, and Danny convinced them to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I started doing my research about the guy, defensive coordinator of San Diego State, defensive coordinator of Arizona State, one of the programs that's coming up. And I've worked at CBS Sports for 10 years in the entertainment business and before I did other things. So I still have a lot of contacts at the CBS Sports level, and so I was talking to these guys, and my biggest concern with Danny coming to New Mexico, and I'm going to have your listeners listen to this, this is a local New Mexico guy that is going to be very, very successful, and he was on the fast track to a head coaching job at a major, major conference. They were watching him. My biggest concern, I told Danny when I met him, was you come here, the community doesn't support you, you fail, we might ruin this guy's coaching career. So he's a great coach. He brought Rocky back. He's got a great coaching staff. He's got a bunch of young players. So I just ask everybody, and I know COVID's going on right now, so there's not going to be any fans this year, but when we get through the COVID stuff, even on TV, booster money, whatever it is, let's support our local teams. Let's support our basketball teams and get out there as a community, because Danny's out there with his ball players out in the community. And I think, you know, he's won everywhere he's gone. He's been successful everywhere he's gone. But in New Mexico, it's not just a winning coach and it's not just good players. The community has to be there and has to support him. You know, this last three or four years, I know they weren't that good. You know, averaging 10, 12,000 people at a game, sometimes 2,500. I mean, Jim, let's be frank. Even when we had losing seasons, we were getting 25, 28,000 people at the local games.
Yes.
Back in the 80s, 90s. So I think we've lost reaching out to the community, and I think that's what Danny changes.
I agree with you. I think he's we've had him on this show. We've had his assistant coaches on the show, planning on getting him back on. He's a very well-spoken coach and very enthusiastic. And I do know Rocky Long. I know him not well, but when I was a freshman at El Dorado High School, so that would have been 1972, Rocky had just graduated from the University of New Mexico, and he was doing his student teaching. His best friend, who has now passed away, sadly, Larry Corpitz and Rocky were both student teachers at El Dorado High School. And I played basketball with those guys every single day after school. And just for your information, Rocky Longs can hoop. He can go to the rim.
He was a great athlete.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I've heard today that if there's sprints going on, Rocky can run with a lot of the guys on that football team. And
let me make this very clear. At my age, I snow ski, water ski, and golf. I don't do anything that's gonna hurt my golf game.
I understand. Jeff, how important was playing football to your education?
Oh, it was everything. Well, you know, and for me it was football. For you it was basketball. What I tell people, it's not really like my sons. I don't know if my sons will ever play football. One's into taekwondo. He's one belt away from a black belt. The other guy does ninja and esports, you know, and they're great athletes, but I don't know if they'll ever play football. But let's call it activities. We had activities that kept us focused, and we had to be successful in school to be focused in activities. And my biggest issue in the state of New Mexico today is we literally, Jim, I'm telling you, from our days in high school, we have literally cut activity budgets and activity programs away. We have also cut trade skills away from our schools. So where our friends were learning to welding, we're learning shop, and we were preparing to go to college, but we all played sports, we all learned a skill. Now, we use sports to keep us engaged, but other people use band, drama, other activities. Our state has cut so much of that away that the kids aren't staying in school and aren't staying engaged in the schools. And you go on the campaign trail, I really saw this. You go to some of these communities, we have a 45 to 50% dropout rate in some of our schools. And when you look at our poorest and our minority Latino communities, sometimes we have 55, 60% dropout rates. So your kids are dropping out because we're not keeping them engaged. So sports was a huge football. I mean, let's be frank. When I was playing football in high school, when I was playing football as a kid growing up, hey, man, I was going to play for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes.
I was going to play for the Raiders, right? But then you get to college and realize, let's be realistic, right? What did you get there? But that was our avenue. Now, your family and my family, if we didn't have sports, yeah, we probably – my parents would have pushed us to college no matter what, right? We were going to go to college no matter what. We were fortunate enough to get scholarships and go play sports. My point is, we have cut activities out of these kids, and this is, I have pitched this since I came back here. I was in shock how much we do this. We have decided, well, every kid has to go to college, and who cares about these activities? Books. And we know that even with COVID right now, we're seeing it with our children. I mean, our kids are in sixth grade. This not having interaction with other students, interaction with teachers. We're seeing our kids who are getting A's and B's right now. We're seeing our kids struggling right now because there's no activities. And to have our state, I'm not going to judge the governor's decision, but to be one of only like five states that are not having activities for schools right now when we can protect these kids, you're seeing it. It's bubbling up. It's going to be a major issue for some of these kids, specifically seniors. And so I think it's a little unfair. So we need to fund more of those programs to keep our kids engaged, and that's going to improve our schools. That's going to improve our education. That's going to improve college admissions. And if you look at the numbers, all the boys are being left behind. And I'm trying to warn people right now, all our young boys that were engaged in these type of activities are now being left behind, and we're going to have major problems in the next 10 years with unskilled, uneducated male populations. And that means they're not going to be good fathers. They're not going to be good husbands. That means they're not going to have a job to be able to support their families. And it's about creating opportunities. And that's what sports did for us. So it's not just sports. It's about creating opportunities and activities for people. And I'm telling you, I'm living it right now because our kids will be fine. But my two sons, I see it. And we live in the Northeast Heights, mm-hmm. APS, supposedly some of the best school districts in the state. I see it within our school district. And APS in our state is doing nothing about this. And we're about to pull our kids out because we see the teachers are doing a great job. The teachers are doing an unbelievable job. But our administration and our state does not give the teachers the ability to do their jobs. And they've got so much activity for my sons to get art every other year. For my sons to get music every other year, you and I got art and music every year, and we hated it.
Yes.
But we were exposed to it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm talking about. So sports was our avenue. I just talk about activities. And that's a whole different subject we can have a whole nother conversation on. But this is one of the biggest reasons I believe our schools and our and we continue to struggle because it's this whole push-pull. And I'm one of those people that, hey, federal government, give me, as a state, our money and leave us alone. Because when you look at states that educate from the bottom up, not the top down, those are the successful states. And let me make this a political comment. My father, as governor, changed the structure of our state to the cabinet positions you know today. Now, other governors have expanded a little bit, but my father created that. Guess what position he never created?
What position?
Secretary of Education. Because he, and that was Bill Richardson that created that, because my father, coming from education and a football high school coach, he knew that if you put a Secretary of Education at the state level, the communities, the schools, the cities, the counties can educate their kids much better from the bottom up than the top down. And
yeah.
I'm living it. My kids are in sixth grade right now. I'm living it. I'm seeing it. That was one of my big stinks on the campaign trail is we have to go. That was one of the things I said on the campaign trail. You know, I don't know if I can eliminate PED, but I would eliminate the secretary position, or I would appoint somebody at the secretary position that comes from the field that understands we need to educate our kids from the bottom up, not top down.
Jeff, I so appreciate everything you're saying, and you've been a lifelong Democrat. Your family's been involved in the Democrat Party, but you come from a background where people talk together, reason together. You had some transparency. Your father had transparency in government. And if I can offer any criticism, it's not necessarily about shutting this down or opening this up, but I'm frustrated because I don't think Michelle Lujan Grisham we'll have a conversation with a Democrat like Jeff Apodaca on video in front of all of us so that you can voice your opinion to her. She just keeps coming up with all these things every Thursday where they determine our life course and the so-called experts have made these decisions. But it's not transparent. It's the conversation not happening in front of us. And that's the only thing I've really been trying to appeal to the governor about is, please, just do this in front of us. Let's have a conversation. Let's work it out together. Heck, I don't know of any Democrat legislators that are really participating in the process except for a couple that sit on her small committee.
I've talked to, you know, we're friends with all of them. I've talked to many of them. She doesn't communicate her, you know, again, political leaders in today's world, and it's not just the governor, it's other people too, they're making political decisions based on what's the best move for them, not what's best for New Mexico. Now, I don't disagree with the governor locking down some of our state, but if you're going to allow people to go into Lowe's, I don't understand why you're not allowing people to go into small businesses. Now, she's flexible. She's come around a little bit on that. But I tell people, I was working on a Sunday morning, 7 o'clock in the morning at one of our warehouses. We were getting up and running, you know, back when, you know, COVID kind of came out in, you know, April, I guess it was. I mean, she shut us down in March, but like in April it was. I remember being at Lowe's, 7 a.m., 22 people in line self-checking out. I counted it. Mm-hmm. There were two of us buying stuff, like mechanical stuff. The rest were buying gardening stuff. And so, and at the time, Osuna Nursery was shut down. You know, the local nurseries were shut down. So my point is, COVID's very serious. We have to take it very seriously. We all have to wear a mask. We all have to be separated. I agree with all that. You know, I get not having the bars full. I get not having the 20-year-olds having parties. Absolutely. But there are small businesses that are going out of business every day. I'm living it. I'm seeing it. I see some of our vendors going under, you know, and so we have to work together to solve some of these problems. I think that's a major problem. And again, going back to not just her, some of our politicians that are holding office today, they're making decisions based on political careers, not based on what's best for New Mexico. And that's what frustrates me as a business owner and as a New Mexican. And growing up, I mean, I'll tell you a quick story because I know I'm rambling a little bit, but on the campaign trail, I had four prominent Democrats that everybody would know who I'm friends with. They came to me and said, we can't support you for one reason. I go, what's that? He goes, you're too friendly with the Republicans. We've got to eliminate them. And I just started laughing. I go, do you know that's exactly the opposite thing we need to do right now? Like, we need to bring them to the table. We need to talk with them. We need to visit with each other. And then I laughed. I said, by the way, who are the four Republicans you don't like? And I laughed my butt off because three of the four were Democrats, by the way. Right? So you see people as they are, or you see business leaders, right? Hey, 52% of CEOs in this country are Democrats, right? 50% of the businesses are owned by Democrats. So it's about, let's be smart, let's make common sense, let's just do what's best for the people of New Mexico, and let's do what's best for all New Mexicans and for our state. And that's kind of the biggest, you know, that's kind of one of the biggest reasons I ran for governor, because I don't want a political career. I just want to fix things, because my wife and I moved back here. We're frustrated as business people. We're frustrated as New Mexicans that we see our state at 50th in everything.
Yes.
And having issues when I know the opportunities our state have. I've lived outside this state for 23 years. I've helped build opportunities for other countries, for other companies, for other states. I've seen it. I've done it. And for us not to take advantage of the opportunities between the labs, tech transfer, small business, infrastructure. I mean, I could go on and on and on. We could literally create hundreds and thousands of jobs and boom the economy by working together and not fighting with each other.
Jeff Apodaca on the phone with us this afternoon, and we're going to take one more break, have one more last segment with Jeff. This has been so amazing, Jeff. I'm so blessed that you've spent the time with us. We'll be right back. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Hi, I'm Allie Enninga, running for House District 15. Here are my thoughts on important challenges we all face. Our homes and neighborhoods are where we raise our families. They need to be safe. We must fight crime by supporting our police officers and first responders who protect our right to be safe in our homes and neighborhoods. As your representative, I will also fight for your right to protect and defend your family. If not now, when? Contact me at whatwillalliedo.com. Learn more at alliefornm.com and join me now. Vote for a great New Mexico tomorrow. I'm Allie Enninga, and I approve this ad.
Paid for by Ally for NM. Leslie K. Garcia, Treasurer.
I'm Rob Snead, General Manager at Power Ford. If you're tired of the other guys, old school, hokey games, and cheesy sales tactics, then come experience something new school at Power Ford. Our approach is simple. We make it all about you. Every new vehicle comes with the confidence of a 100,000-mile warranty, complimentary maintenance, and roadside assistance. And we also guarantee that we'll beat any new Ford deal in New Mexico or put $1,000 cash in your pocket. Find your ride at mypowerford.com.
Call 888-243-8183 for details.
Whether at home or in the workplace, we're all leaders. Become a better leader in this leadership moment with Craig Groeschel.
Early in your career, you boldly promise, for the rest of my career, I promise we'll always do blank, or for as long as I'm here, I promise we'll never do blank. These bold, definitive, apparently irreversible declarations are born out of deep values, sincere passion, and a missional mindset. And they are incredibly helpful, valuable, and productive until they're not. There might be a few things that you promised that you would never ever do that it actually becomes wise for you to start doing. And the opposite is true as well. There's some things you promised that you'd always do, no matter what, as long as we're here, that don't make as much sense over time. And that's when it's right to be wrong.
That was Craig Groeschel on a KNKT Leadership Moment. Hear more at life.church/leadership podcast.
Listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back to ABQ Connect. Jeff Apodaca, the son of the former governor, 24th governor of the state of New Mexico, Jerry Apodaca, was his dad. He grew up in politics. He has grown up in the entertainment industry. He was a football player, state champion at Santa Fe High School in football. He has such a diverse background, and now he is working in agriculture and growing hemp, and the list of products, Jeff, that you've gone through and all the jobs you're creating, just amazing. One more time, tell us a little bit about your business. And the most important thing I want to close our program with today is I want to know the people, the men and women that you could point out to us that spoke into your life.
Well, thanks again, Jim, for having me on. Our company is Santa Fe Farms, and we're based right here in Albuquerque and in Santa Fe, and we have 600 acres ourselves, but we really work with farmers to grow industrial hemp, and from that we can make CBD products that you see all over the place. We can make lotions and all this stuff, but we're also making industrial materials. We're making fiber, herd, concrete, which is called hempcrete. We're making bioplastics. we're making graphene, which can go into batteries and other things. So really, we're just, and we're on the first step. I mean, last year was our first year. This is our second year in business, our second growing season. We're really, this industry, the hemp industry, can literally create agricultural jobs, manufacturing jobs, technology jobs, and distribution jobs all in one. And we're building out, we have a great partner and a relationship with Mesa del Sol down south of Albuquerque. We're building out an upgraded facility there. And so this is one step of many that we're going there. So we're very blessed with that. On the point of who's touched me, I mean, you know, people, you know, I guess it's a little cliche, but to be very frank, it's the family. It's the family that, you know, the family that brings you together. I mean, my mom and dad were my inspiration. I mean, my father being the first Latino governor, and it wasn't just being the first Latino governor. My father opened up doors for Latinos, not only in politics, but in corporate America for the first time ever back in the 70s. One of my proudest moments is when I went to Univision. I was with Univision, the Spanish network, for 16 years, building companies for them. My first year at Univision, I would go to meetings around the country, and I would have executives from Fortune 500 companies come to me and go, "Are you Jerry Apodaca's kid?" I go, "Yeah." And they would tell me stories how my father in the 70s and 80s opened up doors for them, for the Latino community, to get into corporate America. So I look right at my mom and dad. I mean, my mother has worked within the Democratic Party, within the women's movement, helping women and helping minorities through her path, my father through his path, and through my cycle of life, right? A couple of teachers in seventh grade that really helped me get through the transition of being the new kid and the governor's kid that I still think of today. A few of my friends that are my friends that helped me through cancer, that helped me, you know, help me through that transition. You know, some of them, Bill Layden, Randy Bertram. They were called the Super Six, my buddies from high school. And then Ben Lucero, who you know very well.
Yes.
You know, Indigo Mortgage. I mean, these are my childhood friends. So they've all had an influence. I can't go to, like, one person besides my parents because every step of the way, I mean, Mike Barr from SMU, if he didn't keep recruiting me through cancer and didn't keep in touch with me through cancer, he kept giving me hope. Like, he doesn't even know how important he was in my life. My godfather, how influential he was in my life. So there's, but I'll tell you a quick little story, which just gives you perspective of how I look at life. And this young boy does not even know how much he affected my life. I went to MD Anderson and was diagnosed. And after about 6 months, things weren't going well. The tumor wasn't shrinking. I was still getting violently sick, lost all my hair. I was a senior, going to the prom, going to graduation with no hair, just as a 17-year-old, just upset. When we first got diagnosed, there was a Mexican family from Mexico City, and they had a 10-year-old kid that had bone cancer. We come back 6 months later, and I'm literally complaining to Dr. Jaffe and the doctors at MD Anderson and my parents how I don't have any hair. I got to go to graduation with no hair. Literally complaining about that. I walk out, and there's the 10-year-old kid. Happy, you know, and I'm 17, he's 10 because I was in pediatrics. 10-year-old kid, his family happy that he's surviving. And I look down, and they've amputated his leg. And I sat there. Said, how selfish was I? Because I'm complaining about my hair, which is important to a 17-year-old. But I turned around and looked at that young little boy, knowing he'll never have a leg again. And he was happy to be alive. I've never looked back, and I've never questioned my choices. And I just keep moving forward. And every day is a very blessed day with my faith in my Lord Jesus Christ. And it's just the right path for me. That's all I can say.
Jeff Apodaca, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today on ABQ Connect.
Thanks, Jim. I didn't realize I was going to get so sentimental, but thank you so much. It's been a great conversation. I really haven't had this in-depth conversation with anybody, specifically on radio, in a long time. So thank you, because it really grounds me back onto what I have to do every day with my employees and my people and what we have to do in the state of New Mexico. And now I think people will get a feeling of why I ran for governor, why I care so much, because we have to work together to change things. And I hope your radio show and things that you do at Calvary and what Skip and them, you guys do in your community, we all have to work together to change our state. And let's stop fighting with each other and work together to fix things. That's all I got to say.
Amen, my friend. We will talk
Amen,
to
brother.
You soon.
God,
thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, God bless you, man. Thanks so much.
See ya.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. For service, call 504-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.